You're listening to Thrive, conversations from the fertile edges with me, Pollyanna Darling. The edge is where different ecosystems meet. It's the place where the tended meets the untended, where field meets forest. Edges are diverse, abundant with life, and a little unruly. In this first series of conversations, to celebrate the launch of my new book, Bedridden to Buff, you'll hear stories and wisdom of people who have direct experience of living through, with, and beyond pain, sharing the information and ideas that open portals to new possibilities. Today, as part of this series on moving beyond pain, I'm delighted to be speaking with Lauren L'Amour. Lauren is a speaker, author, spiritual teacher, and certified coaching professional with a BA in economics, an MS in mental health counseling, and more than 20 years of coaching experience. She's the founder of Courageous Souls Rising Academy and a certified positive intelligence coach. In addition to her coaching practice, Lauren has actively contributed as an advisor to international humanitarian nonprofits for the past two decades, focusing on aiding first responders and those displaced by environmental crises and war. Despite her varied roles over the years, Lauren most cherishes the title Mother. Welcome to Thrive, Lauren.
Thank you, Pollyanna. It's wonderful to be here with you.
So as you know, on this series, we're talking about moving beyond pain, and I know you have a story to share about that. So let's start there and see where we get to. Please go ahead and share your story with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, and I love this topic of podcast as well. It's such an important topic to explore because I remember when I was going through what I call the great reorg of my life, there weren't too many resources out there. This was about 12 years ago or so. I remember looking for books or podcasts, even of people that would talk about the struggle, the suffering, and even the pain that they were experiencing, looking for resources to help me sort of find my way through. But what happened to me, like I said, I called it the great reorg of my life, where most areas of my life were shaken up and restructured. So from family to finances and finally to faith, where I woke up virtually unrecognizable to myself. And I'll get into a little bit about what that means. But family, I was going through a divorce, had two early teenaged children that I had to tend to. My finances were deeply, deeply affected through some difficulty in the divorce and the economy. And shortly after all of that occurred, I had Lyme activated, which led to Bell's palsy of my face and left my face partially paralyzed and frankly unusable. So I was not able to blink at all, not able to smile, eat. You would not be able to hear me drooling. I had to literally tape up my face so that you could understand me and I could function. Now, normally with Bell's palsy, that would rectify itself after about 6 to 8 weeks and you go back to living life normally. But in my case, something that they call synkinesis kicked in, which meant that my face was never going to go back the way that it was. And so, I mean, fortunately, I live in an area where we had specialists, facial nerve specialists, so I was able to go right in and get PT and support around that. But what I learned very quickly is that nerve regeneration can be a very painful, painful process and a long-standing, ongoing process. So it took me close to a decade to work with this. I still have to work with it. I still have to manage my muscles and get treatments for it, but the pain has finally subsided. And so learning
when you said Lyme, I just wanted to clarify for anyone listening, when you said Lyme, you mean Lyme disease as borne by ticks from deer?
Yes. That's what happened. Very prevalent where I live in the States. And so, yeah. And then oftentimes you can get it and not even know that you have it, which was the case for me. It was lying dormant. And when all of these stressors occurred, it got activated. And it's very common for Bell's palsy to occur as sort of a co-symptom. And so that's exactly what happened with me.
Well, I'm just thinking, listening to you, when you're talking about losing your identity, that having something happen on your face, which is, you know, if you think of yourself, you look in the mirror and you see your face, like that's really big, right?
Yep. It was a big, the irony wasn't lost on me, and just looking at, my face is actually representing pretty much how I'm feeling on the inside. I mean, I had to joke about these things and keep my humor about me, but really there was a lot of reality to that as well. And so thankfully I had the mindset already and not all the time, obviously, but to remember that there was an opportunity here to learn and grow and develop as a spiritual being, recognizing that none of this was happening by accident and that there was a lot I could move through in this experience. Now, I'm not going to say I was there every day and that I remembered that truth every day. I didn't. It was a messy process for sure. But thankfully, and this is a bit about what I teach now, but thankfully I had been in this work for about a decade prior and had been teaching and so on and so forth. So I at least had the mindset and some tools to help me sort of re-remember the truth of what was happening, stay in the present moment, and deal with the pain on all the different levels, mind, body, and spirit.
So I'm really curious, did you actually wake up one morning and your face was paralyzed? Is that how that works? And did that come with a lot of pain?
Yeah, it came with a tremendous amount of pain. So no, how it generally works, and this is fairly common, but this was my story. I started to get an earache, which I never really get, the night before. Then I woke up to what felt like a searing hot poker iron in my ear. Still felt, okay, this is a pretty bad earache, but, I'm okay. No symptoms there, Felt a little bit of numbing, tingling on that side of the face. But again, I just felt like, okay, maybe I'm just getting a pretty bad earache. I had plans with my then fiance, now husband, to go away to Maine. So I was like, you know what? I feel okay. I'll take a Tylenol or something and see how we go. So we went anyway. The pain still stayed with us, but the numbing and the tingling started to get worse and worse. Got up to Maine about half a day later, in the afternoon. I looked in the mirror and my face had completely sunk. I wasn't moving and the paralysis was starting to kick in, which, as you can imagine, is a terrifying experience. So I'm like, am I having a stroke? Which is very common and they can't tell, really. You have to go into the hospital and get tested. So I called my doctor. That's what she said. She said, you need to go right away and make sure you're not having a stroke. It's probably Bell's palsy, but just go to make sure. So that's what we did, hopped in the car, got to the hospital, got tested. And in fact, it was Bell's palsy, which was also an interesting experience because it was a relief, as horrible as this was. But to find out that I was not having a stroke gave me that sort of reframe immediately, which, sort of was the beginning of my learning around this with this whole process. And I'll never forget my fiance at the time, and he was my new fiance. So we were sort of in that period, and he's my second husband. For anybody who's listening, I think you might be able to relate when you make that second decision. Sometimes it's a little tenderly, let's just say. So he's there, just waiting for me. So supportive and loving and sitting in the waiting room. And I'll never forget his face of relief when I came out and just, full of love and concern and care. And it was really, here I was, my face is all rearranged and, and it was just a very tender and touching moment for us as well. And when we got home, he started making me laugh as he often does. And my face started cramping up and I said, stop, stop. You can't, it's actually causing me pain when you're making me laugh. He said, hold on a second. He went in and got the medical tape and taped up my face so I could continue laughing. I said, okay, I think this guy's a keeper.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So. I'm just curious about, because I really don't know anything about Bell's palsy. How much pain does it cause on a day-to-day basis? Like, what's it like to be in that experience?
The pain can be ongoing and never ending. And it can be all pervasive on your head. So I was feeling it. And it's different for everyone from what I understand. And it's the nerve regeneration, from what I was told, that's actually causing this ongoing pain. First it was, before the regeneration started, it was just cramping like a Charlie horse in your face, on your neck, on my neck, all over my face. A lovely experience, but there's lots of hot packs, massages. I mean, you name it, it had all sorts of tools. You had little massages you had to use to keep the circulation going, hot, cold packs. But yeah, so it started off with the Charlie horse effect. So you can imagine what that feels like, in the different areas that were affected. But then as the nerve regeneration started, it was sort of just an all-pervasive pain that didn't really come and go in waves. As, I always think about like labor. It sort of came in waves, right? So it would come and it would go and you'd get that little reprieve versus when I had a kidney stone where there was no wave. It was just pure pain all the time. This is sort of the same thing, pure pain all the time. All over. So, and then it just felt like a massive headache too. So you'd have pain in the face, but then also just this ongoing headache. And so, just trying to figure out ways to mitigate that without taking too much ibuprofen or Advil or, so on and so forth. But, back to the birthing, natural childbirth actually really did help prepare me for it. And learning to sort of surrender to the pain and breathe through it versus resisting, which just seemed to make it all worse on all the levels. So.
I had to learn how to do that too. I think that's a really amazing thing to learn how to do, to kind of relax into the pain and just let it be there, because fighting against it just creates so much more tension.
Yeah, absolutely. And even thinking about it, resisting it in my thoughts as well would make it worse.
Can you elaborate on resisting it in your thoughts?
Raging against, and railing against, why is this happening to me? I can't believe it after everything, I mean, I would even... I remember saying, I'm a good person. Why is this happening to me? All the things, which of course just did not make me feel better. It did not, and as we know, the such an intense, strong, mind-body connection, our thoughts will literally show up in our bodies immediately. And so I'd indulge in the victim mentality for a while, and I would notice it in my body right away. So just trying to be present with that as well and give myself a lot of grace and acceptance. And yeah, there was a lot of spiritual growth available to me most days through it. Some days I did better than others, but yeah.
And what would you say was the main thing that got you through that experience when you were having the constant pain?
Allowing myself, and it's a funny thing, but for me, this was my issue. Learning to love myself enough to give myself the grace to rest and do whatever it took to take care of myself. For me, that was my growth edge, because I had been the one who always took care of everyone else. You know, I was the one, the strong one, the one with more energy, the one, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so this again was another big learning edge for me, and having to turn that dialogue around and to give myself permission and grace without judgment and do whatever it took to get through it. No matter how many treatments it took, I used acupuncture a lot. For me, that helped to reduce pain. If I had to take naps in the afternoon, which I did actually a lot, that was partially due to the Lyme as well, but also due to the cramping in my face. It just couldn't, the pain just got too much and I needed to check out for an hour. And just giving myself permission to do whatever it took to get me through.
And were you working while all this was happening?
Yes. I was running my business and raising two children as a single mom and moving. I had one child going into high school and then another moving into another school. And so there was a lot going on, and then moving them through the divorce. Yeah, I had to learn how to juggle all of that. So with regard to my business, I was a coach at the time. I still am, but at that point I was working out of an office. And so I would see most of my clients in person, and that wasn't going to work anymore. So because I'd have to tape up my face in order for them to understand me to be able to. So for years I had been saying, I want to take my business online and over the phone so I could reach more and help more people. So I'm like, okay, here we go. So that way I could actually tape up my face. It wouldn't be a problem with the session. And I just began to slowly shift over there, which was an interesting experience, because even though it was a low point in my life, doing that work filled me. I was able to still be able to help people and feel alive in the moments of doing that. And that also was a very interesting experience for me.
Yeah, I think having something to put your energy and attention and your creative energy into other than whatever's going on in your own body is a really useful thing to have.
I agree. Yeah. Especially if I think if it's aligned with your life purpose and you feel like it is something of purpose.
Yeah.
For me, it felt like it really did make a difference.
Yeah. I mean, what I notice is if I'm not putting my life force energy or my creative energy into something outside of myself, then I tend to get very caught up in whatever's going on in my body, or the pain, or how awful I feel, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. It's like too much energy focused inwards and not enough outwards. And then at the same time, there's that balance that you're talking about of actually giving yourself the grace and time to be with whatever happens to be going on in your body and give yourself what you need. So I think there's quite a, it's a dance, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a different dance for everyone. And it's, you know, no right or wrong way, just giving yourself the grace and space to be able to move in the way that serves you best.
Yeah.
And some days you'll do better than others, and it's okay.
If you're tired of feeling trapped by chronic pain, get inspired and reclaim your life with Bedridden to Buff. In this little book, I share my remarkable yet gentle transformation from being bedridden in 2017 to winning medals in a national paddleball competition. This uplifting story includes powerful alternative healing methods and pain management techniques, plus insights to help you change your relationship with pain. It gives you the tools you need to move beyond chronic pain and into a life of vitality and gratitude. Find Bedridden to Buff on your favorite ebook or audiobook platform. And now back to our fertile conversation. I've got this feeling of something like faith that's carrying you through this experience. Like there's a real sense in listening to you speak of some kind of faith in a better outcome, or some kind of faith in things rolling in a way that is sort of serving your heart and soul. And so I'm curious, what do you think that faith is that got you through that experience and healed? Because you're healed now, right?
Well, my face still is partially paralyzed, but the pain is no longer, you know, pervasive. And I'd like to think I'm psychologically and spiritually healed as well, but as we know, that's an ongoing job. But faith absolutely, absolutely got me through. And I think, you know, having been doing the coaching, the spiritual coaching work that I had, and having the trainers and mentors that I had, absolutely helped me. Now, does that mean that, and I, because of it, I had developed a growth mindset as well versus one of, you know, fate and this is it. And which I had an interesting experience when I went to the hospital with regard to that, because, you know, I'd been living in that way and that mentality for about a decade. But two things I want to say about that. Number one, that doesn't mean that I found myself in this scenario and just sailed through it. I don't want to leave anyone with that impression. I absolutely did not. However, because I had been living in this way and thinking in this way and developing my faith, I was able to bring myself back on course when I did, you know, inevitably fall off multiple times a day. And I can see the genius of that 10 years prior or so practicing, preparing me for this moment in my life. But also thinking, isn't this what everyone does? Until I went to the hospital and working with the doctors, there was a Harvard doctor who started this facial nerve clinic, and her PT, who was a specialist in facial nerve reconstruction and regeneration. And she said to me, it's amazing to see how positive you are and how you keep moving forward despite. And I said, well, what choice do I have? And she said, oh, well, 90% of our clients go on medication and give up.
Wow.
Which, yeah. And they actually wanted me to come in and do a coaching program for them. We talked about that a little bit, but I had to heal myself. I just didn't feel like I could hold the space, but I did give them, we talked a bit about how they might be able to approach some of their clients, but it was I want to say I wasn't totally surprised, but I was a little taken back at the yeah. large number of people who just couldn't get over the fact that their face may never go back to the way it was.
So I'm really curious, when you say that multiple times a day you were bringing yourself back mm-hmm. to something, what were you bringing yourself back to? Like, what was that anchor?
To my core and to my connection to source is how I think about it. That's my spiritual practice. So, and again, I had been learning these techniques to do this, meditation and healing techniques to anchor myself, to ground myself in my body, my being, and then ultimately into the present moment, where I would then be able to feel that connection to source, to God, some people, your higher power, however you like to think about it. Those are my beliefs. But I can absolutely tell a difference from when I am in that space versus, which I also would relate to being in my heart being open, my mind being quiet, that place where all is well, regardless of what the externals are, versus being in my head full of fear, you know, terror, sometimes. Not understanding, confusion, fear, doubt, and confusion are taking over. There's no peace anywhere to be found. And I can't figure out how to get to the next hour. There were moments like that, you know? And so thankfully, I knew the difference. And I knew the path to bring myself back. And for that, I am eternally grateful. Saved my life. And then I turned around and have been teaching people how to do that ever since, so that you can not only enjoy those moments every day in your life, or as many of them as possible, but also create a beautiful supportive structure for yourself, so that, you know, when life takes you on the roller coaster and you're on the downward ride or adventure, right? You have something that can support you so that you can move through it with as much grace as possible.
Yeah. So is that what you're talking about? Is that a somatic experience of kind of coming into the body, or is it something beyond that?
It's a combination of a somatic experience and an energetic experience that I learned from one of my first spiritual teachers. And, you know, it's a step-by-step process that I learned. But the idea is that you bring your whole spiritual energetic being into, and these are ancient spiritual practices, but the idea is you're bringing in that soul and spirit into your body, anchoring it and grounding it, so that you actually are aware even of your body. A lot of times I always, the image I see, I don't know if they're popular in Australia, but here you'll often see these figures. They're airborne figures, often in used car sales lots. Do you ever see them and they go,
you know, those flip, yeah, floppy ones that do that weird wave motion. Yeah.
Exactly. I know, hard to describe just talking about it, but if they could see the video, they would see us acting it out. I always think of us often, you know, as our spiritual, you know, energy body. When we're not grounded, it's sort of up here doing this, you know, this above our heads, flopping about. Well, when that's happening, we don't have access to all that power. And that knowing that all is well, that we are far beyond our physical body, far beyond anything we're seeing here in the physical world. And when we can connect to that power, all is well. And we know that we have everything we need to get through the moment. And it is moment by moment. And that also was an important thing for me to remember and to practice. I remember just always wanting to get, I want to get through this. You know, I want to get on the other side of this. But of course you can't until you, yeah, get it back into the moment and back into your body.
So, you know, like mentally, I understand what you're saying. It all makes complete sense. And when you're not in pain, it's kind of easy to go, oh yeah, that sounds good, you know. Like, and then there's those moments where sometimes I have found that I can do all that process and get myself into a good place, even if I'm not. And then there's other times where you just can't do it, mm-hmm, because of too many factors coming together, or there's pain and there's life stress and there's something else, or it's the child inside will just take over and completely have a meltdown. Did you have moments like that where you were not able to access that kind of knowing that you were being held by something greater?
Oh, absolutely. And for all the reasons and experiences that you're describing. And I think that's the part where giving ourselves grace really can come in handy. I have found just on my spiritual journey and as a healer, trying to push against these things and force them to happen does not work. You know, it just doesn't. So it's like understanding that and giving yourself grace to just let go and take care of whatever part. So if it's a younger part that just needs, maybe we need to do some inner child work, check in. Who is this that's crying out for attention and care? And give that to her in the moment. And that becomes the most important thing. Otherwise, we're just going to be railing against that, and it becomes a big wrestling match is sort of how I always think about it versus just, okay, let me just surrender. Sometimes it was just, I need to take a nap. I need to check out and just reset, restart, you know, and it was different tools, different times. And I had a whole bunch of tools at that point, thank God, that I just would carry around with me and be like, okay, let's try tapping. Okay. Nope. Toss that out. That didn't work. Let's try taking a walk in nature. Nope. That didn't work. You know, let's try the gratitude. Nope. You know, and then it'd be like, all right, I'm going to just take a nap, or, you know what, maybe I just need an ice cream, or,
yeah,
you know, whatever she needs.
Yeah. You know, or a maybe Netflix that binge or something.
Yeah. And whatever, and no guilt, you know, I was becoming very aware of, I'm recovering Catholic. And so becoming very aware of my guilt around, plus, you know, and I'm from Boston, so we've got this Puritan work ethic going here as well. So, you know, you need to be working all the time. And if you're not, you're not quite living up to your potential. And so
I totally understand that.
So that's, I guess that's the benefit too of that programming comes up, and hopefully we can mitigate some of it anyway.
It's very tenacious, I notice. Like, it's very tenacious programming. And it does have this way of not letting you rest, because, mm-hmm. I mean, I just always think about Martin Luther. I guess he's the guy that the Puritan mentality was kind of built upon, is that he had that very, you know, work is the thing that will get you into the kingdom of heaven. The whole business of we're sinners and we're bad and we've got to work at not doing that. Personally, I found that really a kind of pernicious thing that's in me that isn't mine and doesn't belong to me, but that necessarily has got a lot to say when I want to just not do anything at all. You know, when I want to just rest or relax or do things that are unproductive. And I've learned to not pay any attention to that voice, but I think it sometimes can also almost interfere with healing as well, because it's kind of saying that, you know, like you can end up with a Puritan mentality around healing, that I have to keep doing things for healing, you know, or I've got to keep doing stuff in order to be better. Do you understand what I mean?
I do. And I found that myself.
How did you deal with that?
You know, I still deal with that. I mean, I think it's an ongoing process, and really just paying attention and asking myself, is this a loving voice? Is this a kind voice to myself? Or is this, you know, unkind? Is this more of that, you know, that you must be something other than yourself in this moment in order to be okay? And if it's that voice, then I know it's not serving me. And I'll, you know, do what I can to release it. But it's generational. As you know, we bring in this programming from many generations, probably, especially that one. So, you know, many and many spiritual traditions, the work that we do, are we're healing seven generations behind and in front of us. And so it takes a little bit, but every little bit we do makes a huge difference in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that gives me hope to continue doing it, even though I can get annoyed with myself, to be honest. This again? This? My clients will often say that to me. Are you kidding? Why are we still talking about this? I'm like, we're at another level talking about this now, though. You know, the journey never ends. Yeah. Hopefully, that's the good news, you know. And as long as we have skin, we have stuff, I like to say. So we're just doing our job.
Yeah, there is that thing, isn't there, around, I think it must be because our culture is so focused on success that, you know, you've kind of won if you're fully healed.
That, I want to meet that person.
Yeah, me too.
Have you interviewed them yet?
I haven't found one yet.
But note, note to listener, if anyone says they're there, take note.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's why I wanted to have these conversations about moving beyond pain, because I think there's some idea, at least there is in somewhere in my mind, I don't know where it came from, that something happens, you get an injury, you get an illness or whatever, and then like somehow or some way or other, you're completely healed and that's it, you're done. Everything goes back to how it was before, which is a crazy idea anyway, because nothing goes back to anything. And also our memories are flawed, so we don't even know what we'd be going back to. But, you know,
my husband for myself, always says that nostalgia is a funny thing.
Yeah, like memory is so unreliable. So moving beyond pain seems to me to be something about going through these changes that happen that change your relationship to pain, the way you experience pain, the levels of pain that you have. But I haven't found a kind of like, well, that's, you know, like I'm done now. I don't have anything going on from that. I'm just, you know, in perfection.
But you are in perfection, actually. Exactly how you are right now, right in this moment, there's nothing wrong.
Yes. I guess the idea of perfection I'm talking about is no pain of any kind, which is not actually being alive.
Yeah, especially, that's why I was going to say something, but I won't even put that out into the universe about age-related issues, but even that's changing. You know what, one thing, I hear what you're saying though, and I also had that mindset, which is when my face wasn't getting any better faster. That was a point of real frustration for me. The pain was still there, but it was getting better, but also the functionality of my face took a very long time. And I could tell you a story about that in a bit, but just back to the thinking of when's it ending, or, you know, so on and so forth, and how to frame that. I remember listening to Oprah one day, and she was talking about your new normal and learning to accept that this is the new normal for you, and that there isn't any going back. And, you know, would we even want to, thinking about spiritual and psychological or intellectual growth? If you told me that you can go back and everything will be the same, but you can't take the wisdom with you, I wouldn't go back. I really wouldn't.
Yeah. And I think the idea of a new normal is actually really lovely, because if you can have a new normal now, you can have another one tomorrow, and you can have another one in a month, and you can have another one in a year, and all those new normals can be different to this moment now. Because I think what is so devastating when you're in pain, especially chronic pain, is the idea that this is how it's going to be forever. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that really closes people down. And maybe that's what the hospital people were talking about in your story. That's a defeating idea. If you're in the moment of something that you're not enjoyable, that doesn't feel good, and your mind is going, well, that's it. Now you're screwed because this is how it's going to be forever. That really closes everything down.
It sure does.
Yeah.
It also defines you in such a small way, like as if this is the only thing that is now defining you.
Yeah, exactly. And so that new normal idea is like, well, this might be today's normal, but tomorrow can be completely different, and next week can be different again, and the week after that can be different again. Yeah.
I love that idea. I hadn't really thought about it like that, but I mean, being an adventurous type of person, I love that idea. I know you are too. So,
Yeah.
oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, such a wonderful way to think about it. And this is just one of those things we have to kind of bring along with us, but who knows what sort of interesting experiences will come of that. I mean, one of the things, just back to that original story about what the doctors want to say, the medical professionals, and I think they were trying to be helpful, at just given the background that they had had where people were basically checking out, saying, okay, well, whatever. I don't think they wanted to give me false hope, you know?
Yeah.
I really don't. I think they were just really kind of feeling their way through it, to be quite honest. I don't think they knew what to do with people. Although now there's a lot of research that shows that the mind-body connection is so much stronger than they even thought back then. But they said to me, your face is probably never going to get much better. And at that point, my eye would not blink all the way down. I mean, you couldn't understand me, really. I would slur, you know, with no movement really at all. I mean, you can see it now, but then it was really pretty bad. And I refused to accept it. I said, thank you very much, but I'll take it from here. And I just refused to accept that. And it continued to get better and better and better.
I think that's really, really, really important that you can take the treatment, you can take the therapy, you can take whatever is offered, but you do not need to take the prognosis, because that's always just an opinion, because no one knows what the future is. So I think that really, really matters that people understand that they can take the diagnosis and the treatment, but you don't have to take anyone's opinion about what your future looks like.
Yeah, absolutely not. And as I said, the research now, a lot of Joe Dispenza's work, Bruce Lipton's work, and many others now are really showing that our thoughts, our visualizations, our energy can really be more malleable. I don't know if that's the best way of putting it, but in a positive and a negative way than we ever thought possible. And we can, in fact, heal ourselves. And I used many of those processes that they've used to do just that. And it was interesting with my face, it became a barometer of stress for me. And so, for instance, I would be the kind of person that would carry a lot of stress. I'd carry mine, I'd carry yours, I'd carry the neighbors. I'd just put it all on the back of my backpack and just keep going, you know, and not even notice the effects that it was having on my body. Well, when this all happened, this is the way I describe it. Like the stress would be coming in here, you know, from far out. For lack of a better way to describe it. But the point being is that as soon as the stress started to creep in, even getting 5 feet away, just for lack of a better way to describe it, my face would start to cramp up. And I remember saying, oh my gosh, in the past, I didn't even know that that stress was affecting my body in that way. And it was, even because I was just so used to override. So now this actually became kind of a gift in a way, because I was able to recognize even the slightest bit of stress, which was affecting me, whether I was aware of it or not, through my face. So my face started to cramp up. So I would be, you know, I'd have to learn to mitigate that stress or say no or set a boundary, which again was all part of the learning experience for me. But that was a pretty interesting thing. And then also just even my changing my thoughts, if my face started to cramp up or get in pain, using positive thinking or deep breathing or meditation would shift and stop the pain. So,
yeah, that's so powerful. And what an amazing tool to have.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So does that mean that you have more trust in your body now?
I would say that's true. That's true. I never thought of it like that, actually, in my body. I always think about it more in terms of my spirit, my soul, when I'm thinking about trust and faith. But of course, the body is a part of it, and it all does work together. And so I guess I'd have to say yes. And I think I truly believe and appreciate the miracle that it is and that we are. Yeah.
So that seems like a really good place to come to a close. If there was one thing, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, of everything that helped you through the whole experience with Bell's palsy and the pain, I'd love you to leave us with what the key piece was for you.
In terms of learning from it, or how to get
both maybe the key piece that got you through it and the key learning that you feel you got?
I think the key piece of learning that I discovered getting through it was to have some sort of system to fall back on that would allow me, like we talked about earlier, to come back into my true core, my connection to spirit, to soul, to my soul. That truly was what got me through, gave me the faith and the courage to keep going in those times when I didn't feel like I had the energy or even the will to do so. And the biggest learning I would say that I got from that is that I matter. I'm worthy of loving myself and caring for myself and doing whatever it takes to ensure that I live a life aligned with my soul and that I do what I can to continue to discover my life purpose and live it and share whatever I've learned with as many as I can.
Thank you so much, Lauren, for speaking with me.
You're welcome. Thank you, Pollyanna. It's always lovely to talk to you.
Thank you for listening to Thrive, Conversations from the Fertile Edges with me, Pollyanna Darling, and my courageous and insightful guest, Lauren Lamour. You can find out more about Lauren's work at lifevisionary.com. That's lifevisionary.com. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you'd leave a rating and share it with your networks. I'll see you next time at the Fertile Edges.